welcome to Label Sessions Presents, the podcast where we talk to the most interesting people about all the things you need to know in the world of innovation, business, design, tech, and culture. I'm Fazla Niso, all the way from Cape Town, South Africa, and today we're joined by Rosie Duncan, a new label mate here at Label Sessions, as well as Nick Sherrod and Josh Nixon from the Label Sessions team. Welcome, everyone.
Hi.
I didn't know we were doing that. Hello. It's good. It's okay.
Yeah. Hello to everyone today.
It's warming us back up. I can see this.
So we'll jump right in with a little bit of an introduction to our new label mate, Rosie Duncan, a communication consultant, author, and mental health advocate who spent her career helping organizations find better ways to talk about what really matters. Rosie, welcome to the podcast. A recent study published by Harvard Business Review says that more and more people are turning to AI for therapy and companionship. They're using it for journaling, self-help prompts, even emotional reassurance. And in places where mental health resources are scarce or extremely costly, AI could unlock access to therapy for millions. But AI also has a tendency to create very believable hallucinations. It makes things up and delivers it with a lot of confidence. It also can't really be trusted with nuance or empathy. Is this use of AI a breakthrough for mental health access, or is it a dangerous shortcut? Which I think you're perfect to jump us off this topic.
It is honestly one of the most fascinating topics of conversation, this, and I could spend hours chatting about it. But fundamentally, I see the pros and cons of both, right? So in terms of accessibility, like you say, it is really important that people have access to this, not just in terms of availability, but also cost, because if we're talking about talking therapies, obviously there's physical therapies, et cetera, which I'm not talking about right now. Talking therapies can be really expensive and it goes on forever and ever and ever. So it immediately cuts out the availability of that to a certain amount of people. The other thing is that, at least with the NHS in the UK, the waiting list to get onto talking therapy, so once you've been prescribed, if you like, by your GP that you can have a talking therapy, it can take 6 weeks. And 6 weeks is a short time frame. So 75% of people get seen within 6 weeks, 95% within 18 weeks, which is a huge amount of time. So I'm not trying to diss the NHS, but 6 weeks is still a really long time. If you need a talking therapy, you need it now, because, and especially with a lot of people, they're only going to help when they really, really need it, when they're in that moment of crisis. So in that sense, it would be fantastic, especially with, I hate to put mental health in this way, but more sort of cookie cutter issues. So say, for example, grief, which is a horrible issue, but probably could be structured in a way where an AI could start to help with that. Having said all of that, obviously, when you're dealing with mental health, these are some of the most vulnerable people, so they really need to be taken care of. And mental health is a huge spectrum. You know, you have, you kind of, I call this lighter touch mental health. It's still bad when you're in it, but your anxiety, this kind of thing, all the way down to really serious mental health, you know, when you're talking about suicide, psychosis, this kind of thing. So when you're looking at AI dealing with these really hardcore issues, it feels like we're not there yet in that we can trust it to deal with this. I'm not saying we can't in the future, but right now, I would say a sort of hybrid of maybe you're sort of triaged by a human who says, okay, I think we can do this, this, this. And if at any point it doesn't work, you have the choice to say, actually, AI isn't working for me, or actually, I'd like to speak to a human. Some people prefer to speak to AI because it's just sort of talking. There's no human responsible at the other side of it, whereas some people like me will only ever want to speak to a human because I want that knowledge. So it's a really, yeah, it's a really complicated area. I think that it could help a lot and I can see how it can. But right now, I wouldn't say that it's a trusted source to deal with the complexities and ranges of what mental health issues are.
It's interesting. There's a kind of like a persistent pattern, I think, with AI, where the because of where we are in the current moment, everyone talks about a person doing a job and an AI. And I think quite often that's really kind of unhelpful to some extent, because AI probably will never be as good as a therapist. But there's times when a therapist can't be there, I guess, to your point. Even during treatment journeys, I guess, it's kind of an interesting thing in these kind of patterns, actually, 11:30 at night or whatever, actually are the ways, if you kind of start from first principles, that you can design something new. So it's almost like the, you know, the kind of language pattern of replace a human with AI kind of in some ways limits the power of what the AI could be, because actually you could try and you could design a service a new way where you can have elements of a talking therapy, I guess, in a mental health context. You can deliver elements of a talking therapy when you can't have a person there. Maybe that's the interesting starting point rather than trying to replace the therapist as such.
I totally agree, because I think it would be, it's nice to have the option to have both. If you can find a way to do this hybrid thing, that would be the most trusted and accessible way to do it. I'm yet to see it done. And obviously we're still at the very beginning of it, but I have no doubt that we will.
Mm-hmm. And also one of the things I just in this whole space, I think is it's a slightly dark pattern as well. But I think one of the things that is interesting in terms of how people are using the LLMs and ChatGPT and elsewhere is that actually what happens to the data of those conversations is a tricky thing that I think is going to flare up at some point.
Mm-hmm. Soon. Yeah.
Just even without people being bad actors as such. But if you look at even in the OpenAI kind of product journey, as they try to commercialize this thing, they're going to be targeting messages to people based on things they've been talking about. There's some very kind of gray zones coming up in terms of, which we know we've found with every kind of new digital technology. There's the kind of, as people try to find ways to make money from it, some of the incentives get very thrown as to how you're treating people and when, and how can you recognize when someone's having a therapy conversation and therefore it's really inappropriate to do lots of things versus when they're asking where to go on holiday and it might even be helpful to do certain things, you know, that this is a new space we're in.
That's it. Yeah. And there's, you know, it's not like a one size fits all answer. You know, it's not a black and white answer. You can't just look at it and go, yes, that's healthy or not. That's not healthy. Like if you were to look at a mole, for example, when you're looking at somebody's brain, there's no, yes, it's this or this. It requires so much more nuance. And to your point about data, how much data do we need to know that we feel really comfortable with what the AI is giving us back? So how, where do we get to a point where we go, okay, now I'm happy to hand that completely over to AI because I think they've got all the scenarios that you could ever need to work with and that they could safely hold somebody through what could be a really, really important and probably horrible situation, because otherwise, why are they in therapy at all? So it is just, it's fascinating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because also one thing I was thinking actually when we were talking about this question as well is the one danger in this in terms of the way we framed it as well is that we're still kind of very much in the space of we kind of let an individual go and have a problem and then we'll kind of put some therapy around them rather than one of the really interesting possibilities of this tech is it could be kind of more empathetic at scale, right? So in terms of currently in a workplace, messages just get sent when it comes into someone's head and they just hit someone whenever there's a consequence of that. It wouldn't be a massive jump for these systems to start to learn a little bit around stress or around how certain people deal with stress and to be able to do a bit of a triage around actually if there's one of these really high stress messages come in, they might not send some of the other stuff for a bit or work out how you could really use this tech to make much more healthy work environments. But we seem to be very trapped into just trying to replicate what we're already doing and therefore only seeing AI as a way to deliver a therapy once someone's hit a problem rather than thinking, actually, how can we make the whole initial thing a bit healthier?
Make it preventative. Exactly like we do with the healthcare. You know, we try and keep everybody fit and healthy so that they don't get ill and then need that.
Yeah.
Since the healthcare system. Absolutely. And you know, that's also an interesting point there about where does the responsibility lie when it comes to mental health? Should it be with the individual or should it actually be with society or the organization that you're working within? Mm-hmm. And I'm working with quite a few research centers at the moment, but one of them is called the Center for Society and Mental Health. And it's looking at how you can impact society. So things like, could we have free Wi-Fi for all? What is it that we can do within policy and the welfare system that helps to elevate everybody's mental health rather than it being, which it is at the moment, the onus is on the individual to sort themselves out. Mm-hmm. So it's again, very interesting conversation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you brought up a very good point there, Rosie, before that I hadn't even considered about the whole using a chatbot or AI versus talking to an actual real life person is that there's a lot of sort of phone anxiety still floating about. And I never even considered the idea that people would rather speak to a bot because they don't want to understand or feel like they're being judged by the people that are on the other end of the phone kind of thing. Yeah. Even if it doesn't give necessarily the right or correct advice even. It's kind of fascinating.
Yeah, it is. And it all depends on that. What that again, there's a generational thing here. Is that kind of the people that are happy to have phone calls. I'm still one of the people that's happy to have a phone call. I like a phone call. I like conversation. But there's a hot, again, with the newer generation, especially post-COVID, when everything was messages and it's all WhatsApp, the actual idea of a voice conversation is far more daunting than a sort of a behind a screen one, if you like. And then again, I mean, like, you can tell me to stop waffling whenever, but there's also a thing here with self-diagnosis, where so many people self-diagnosing that they have, especially things like at the moment, ADHD, anxiety, depression. Now, if you self-diagnose, whatever you think about that as a concept in its own right, you wouldn't be prescribed a talking therapy because you haven't been diagnosed, therefore you haven't been to a GP. So for all the people that have self-diagnosed, they also should be able to have access to sort of the cheaper therapies or cheaper options, if you like. So yeah, that's another kind of filter in terms of mental health.
That thing around anonymity is just a really interesting thing for innovation in general. We've seen this in some of the money or sort of research around money and banking and like pensions and things, where a lot of people fear the judgment of another real human. So actually, if you give them an anonymous interface, maybe not for the decision make in that case, not necessarily for the sort of decision making meeting, but they kind of work out your scenario type stuff. There's actually something right positive for a lot of people around the anonymity. So you can just go, I've set this up in this really weird way because of some weird stress I was under at the time, and I don't want to feel judged for it, but I want to work out the consequences of it, and I want to work out the steps, and I want to play the game of working out in different scenarios, and I want to do that myself before I then have a conversation where I need some trust that someone's going to go and do something for me, in which case I want to see the whites of their eyes. But like, anonymity is just a really interesting kind of design element just now.
Okay. I mean, I can just go on and on, so I will just pause, because I started thinking about, you know, people's embarrassing kind of kinks and stuff they wouldn't want to talk to a human about. And actually, you know what I mean? But these things will present in different ways, and some of them, or at least to the person, can feel highly shameful or highly embarrassing, and they don't want to be judged by a human.